Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null, this is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Today, who's your daddy now? The Great Reset narrative and the loss of personal sovereignty. And who am I talking about? Well, the big daddy is Klaus Schwab and his plan for you and your life and your career. You will own nothing, but you'll be happy. Really? I don't think so, and I don't want you in my life on any level. I'm going to share now some thoughts by Richard Gell and myself that hopefully will take all these competing issues, whether it's COVID and vaccinate or not, and wars that we start, regimes we change, the manipulation of the financial markets, everything going on, believe it or not, you could boil it all down to about 10 companies and the people who run them. And by the way, most of those people have sat on the board of the World Economic Forum or attended their workshops over the last 40 years, and therefore are converts to what they see as the stakeholders. Well, what's a stakeholder? Stakeholder is a person who can control entire industries, all of its policies. They can control governmental agencies. They can control money and make all currencies evaporate and only have a digital currency. They can control your identity by having you have an identity card, and on that card will be everything that they need to know about you. And that's just the beginning. Their idea is to control transhumanism, artificial intelligence, all of the people working. They don't want you working. They want you under their control. How can you do that? You'd have to put a person in an altered state of consciousness. In effect, you'd have to chemically lobotomize them. Oh, you think they wouldn't do that? Listen to the commentary. I'm taking an extraordinarily complex issue and trying to make it understandable and simplify it. Now to the commentary. The Great Reset narrative and the loss of your personal sovereignty and freedoms. It's happening now, and it's going to continue. What are the pieces that are confusing? How can we bring all this together? How can we make it understandable that behind everything you're experiencing now, there's relatively a small group of individuals, and they control everything? Who would have believed that a world democracy such as Canada, one of the U.S.'s major allies and trading partners, would have abandoned its citizens' human rights and freedoms and rode into a complete totalitarian dictatorship? Even though those rules have been rescinded, keep in mind, once you throw a punch, a sucker punch, you knock someone down, you may walk away, but the person's not going to forget what you did to put them on the ground. Americans should not forget all of the institutional crimes against humanity that we've committed. Well, not unlike other large peaceful gatherings around the world to protest draconian pandemic policies, the Liberal Canadian government of Justin Trudeau miscast protesters as racist, misogynist, right-wing cretins and Nazis. The Canadian media followed suit, as did the mainstream journalists in the United States and the United Kingdom. What is not being questioned is who is behind the campaigns to silence critics of all official policy. And although the entire world had access to truckers' press conferences, interviews and film footage of the violent beatings and arrests of the truckers and what they did to small business owners and the average citizens, there was no condemnation whatsoever coming forth out of Washington, out of our body politic, out of Downing Street, or other foreign heads of state. Nor was there any shock or dismay over the freezing of protesters' bank accounts, canceling of their credit cards, and loss of their licenses. Trudeau no longer had a legitimate right to criticize his strongman in China for China's decades-long human rights abuses. The only reverberations have been in nations' populaces, the victims of unsound pandemic measures that are destroying the lives of countless people. But there are powerful players behind the scenes. It does not matter what we protest. Protest genetic modified crops, nuclear power, gas hydrofracking, toxic dumping, or our unproven experimental vaccines, there is the same handful of mega investors who control the financial interest and the stocks and the assets of all private industries. This hidden elite of investment moguls likewise sit on the boards of all major transnational corporations. They, in essence, control the newspapers, the television, the networks, the food and agricultural industries, transportation, Silicon Valley, private military contractors, the entirety of the insurance industry, and the investment in everything that your pensions are invested in. Ever thought what's going to happen when we go now and we are absolutely positively going into a bear market? Bulls buy, bears sell. And what do you think is going to happen when you hold a $30 trillion in official government debt, plus all the other debt that the government has and the citizens has? What do you think is going to happen to these pensions? One day you'll find that your pension manager will let you know that your pensions are reduced or they're wiped out completely. And we're not even paying attention to this. That's what we should consider. Keep in mind, when you own everything, and therefore the courts, you control the judiciary, you control so much, what you fear, they fear nothing, except that you may become informed, better informed, with real information, not propaganda. One could argue that the executives of the largest investment houses, Vanguard, BlackRock, and State Street, are the ultimate policymakers who have the power and influence to assure lobbyists by the thousands invade the federal government at every level to either create or rescind laws to serve their best interest. They control the investment strategies worth tens of trillions of dollars. They are ubiquitous, and they literally control our lives. Not just our investments, but all of the messages and propaganda we receive over the media 24/7. So, a simple question. Where does that leave you and your free will and the sanctity of your body, your mind, and your life? No doubt none of us can recall a time when the world at large has faced so many problems and crises that impinge upon our well-being and the mortality of billions of people. For 2 years, we have been overwhelmed with anxiety and dread and depression and anger and desperately seeking solutions to ameliorate an all-pervading angst as society is completely being reconfigured in the image of those who hold power, influence, and wealth. And they're not hiding it any longer. They're saying it right out loud. Now, there was a time in the past when we believed our elected officials would enact laws to protect the citizenry and provide a climate for sustaining a normal, productive life. The COVID-19 pandemic and those who could capitalize on the opportunities it provided for non-democratic agendas has changed everything. In its place, the masters of government and industry have assured us that existential angst is our new fate. We should embrace it. Faith in an institutional security has collapsed into a tragic drama as the younger generation face an uncertain future and life loses its purpose and meaning. After all, let's just say that you're going to a state college or private university and you're majoring in something that maybe your parents advise or maybe they also are in the same field. And it might take you 4 years, or it might take you 6 years, it might take you 8 years to get your undergraduate, graduate, and advanced degrees. Is anyone at the school informing you that right now, as we speak, at least 60 to 70% of all these unique jobs will not exist because it'll be taken over by robotics and artificial intelligence? And that includes in specific to law. After all, why pay a lawyer $300, $500, or $1,000 an hour when artificial intelligence has read every single piece of law in history and can immediately evaluate a case and give you within 60 seconds how you should defend yourself? Would you rather pay $1 million having white glove firms meet in conference and overbill you, which they all do, and then give you their opinions You see where this is going. So we're not being encouraged to work in fields that are not impacted by automation, robotics, artificial intelligence, or visas coming in from children who are willing to work for one third or one half of what our senior employees are working for today. So what's going to happen when we reach that milestone in our career, 25, 30 years, where we are the master of that little universe? You are respected. You don't have to think twice about any answer that's given you by the people who work with you, because you've been there, you know the answers. You're senior, but now you're out of a job. Someone who's 24 years old, who's willing to work for 50,000 a year, not your 150,000, with no benefits, is going to take your place. And that had never happened before, because last hired, first fired. Senior authorities and those who had a lot of seniority were always protected. No longer. You're at most risk. So faith in institutional security has collapsed into a tragic drama. And the younger generation do not know what the future is. The majority of people's beliefs are grounded and conditioned upon the input and information they receive. And today that information has been thoroughly sanitized through the media that spoon-feed the consuming public a heavy dose of fear and confusion. Those who make efforts to pull back the curtain to expose the global wizard are marginalized and officially canceled by Silicon Valley in an army of faux fact-checkers. Consequently, it should come as no surprise that the culture of non-transparency draping the halls of Washington, the federal health institutions, professional medical associations, and the pharmaceutical complex would spark public suspicions about conspiratorial intentions to shred democracy and individual rights and freedoms. I'll just give you one example, a simple example, and this came from just last night. When someone says, well, Gary, the AMA says that ivermectin doesn't work. But as I mentioned yesterday on this program, when we reviewed the actual body of the article, it clearly shows in its own graphs that ivermectin was substantially more important at preventing infection or death than the non-group, non-ivermectin group. That's one of dozens of studies that exist to show that The Lancet, the New England Journal of Medicine, and the American Medical Association, in my personal opinion, should not be read for accuracy, because they've all been compromised. And the AMA has been compromised for as long as it exists. And that's unfortunate. You make a mistake, one mistake in your career, and if it's public knowledge, you're branded and monikered with that for the rest of your life. These people are serial offenders, and they're never called to task for everything they've done in the past, which has caused human lives. They pay a fine, and they go on to make more profit. So when the same person said, but the vaccines are safe, and I said, how do you know? Well, the government says so. Yeah, they were saying it was safe before it was even given to the first person. They said it was effective at 95% before it was given to the first person. Now they don't want you to see the actual data. Even the New York Times, cloistering so much of the complicity of corporate America's mistakes and government overreach, actually acknowledged this week that the CDC had failed to turn over records and gave the excuse, well, we just don't think Americans are, what, smart enough or aware enough to understand. They might get confused. No, when you want data that was supposed to have been made available throughout the study until its completion to prove that it is safe and effective, and you want that hidden, first for 55 years, then by 75 years. So what does that tell you? What are they hiding? They can't be hiding success, because there would be no cancellation if it was successful. They'd be promoting it everywhere. They'd have all their experts out on every show saying, here are the results, look at the results, look at our studies. But when they want to hide those, yeah, then you're being gamed, and the media is fully aware of it. But they know who pays their advertisements, and they know who, even more than that, the head of the media's companies, they're all controlled by the same group of people. So nobody wants to be off task. No one wants to be off message. If you're off message, you're in trouble. So everyone has to be on message, even when it's wrong, when it's on the wrong side of history, weapons of mass destruction, the wrong side of history, and everyone should have known it. It was so apparent. But official versions have power. So right now we're getting reports in Germany from their insurance agencies that there was 10 times or 9 times more death and injuries than what the government reported. By itself, that should have caused the banning of all vaccines instantly. But it didn't. In the United States, the same, but it didn't. So how can you say that a vaccine is working when it's infecting other people? You're infecting other people. And how can you say that it's safe when you're not looking at the millions of people who have officially been designated as harmed? That is the problem. So we're not being honest about any of this. And if you're not honest about your statistics, either death or injury, and they haven't been, and we have all these victims coming forward and the media will not touch them, then how can you say with any certainty? You can't. So you're saying based upon your biased belief that you're safe and effective. I'm saying only when we have all the statistics and they're honest statistics and accurate statistics, then you can make a reasonably objective call. Are they safe or effective? And how can you say that this was a good study that was done when they excluded pregnant women, excluded cancer patients, excluded people with rheumatoid arthritis, dementia, all these other conditions? You couldn't get in the study. So if you couldn't get in the study because of all these problems, but the moment it is given the FDA authorization to be used, emergency authorization use, and now the very people that you said cannot be in the study because they're sick, and that could mean that they can end up getting sicker or dying, and that would mean our study wouldn't work. Now you're telling these people you must take it. You have cancer, heart disease, you have autoimmune conditions, you must take the vaccine. What does that tell you? That tells you the lies. And this is then intentional. And they will be held accountable in time. So that's what we're dealing with. Objective skepticism, the ability to turn towards the mind's faculty for critical thought, has rapidly declined in American society for several decades. Yet a healthy skepticism is necessary for questioning both the rhetoric and misinformation of official views and propaganda, including hints of what is commonly ridiculed as conspiracy. In fact, who coined the word conspiracy theory? It was the CIA. The ones who actually engage in real conspiracies. When were they held accountable? How about never? With the exception of the Bay of Pigs, they've never really been held accountable. The word conspiracy has lost its meaning and credibility in the American lexicon. Rarely does mainstream media, professional associations, or think tanks, and official federal public relations and propaganda contextualize the term to simply implicate wrongdoing and corruption. When used by authorities, conspiracy is almost always pejorative, a means to slander and label people as loons and quacks. We are led to believe the gospel word of officialdom. The Warren Report, trust it. 9/11 Commission, trust it. No, trust none of these. And more recently, everything spouted by Anthony Fauci in the mouths of the White House, federal health agencies regarding COVID pandemic and the wave of pro-vaccine mania. Very often, conspiracies are ridiculous, bordering on the absurd. Past examples of politically motivated black flag operations and secretive agendas created in corporate boardrooms in the halls of government don't rule out that conspiracies don't exist or never have. When there is sound reason to question the integrity of a politician, health official, media pundit, or corporate executive, it is natural for the inquisitive mind to explore more deeply the hidden motivations and goals underlying the thoughts and actions of conspiracy footprints. In most cases, it is the evidence of contradictions, hypocrisies, or confirmed blatant lies by individuals in authority that give birth to the conspiratorial mind. conspiracies conducted by the government which resulted in unnecessary violence and death are proven to have occurred, and these are a matter of accurate history. The Gulf of Tonkin, the Tuskegee syphilis experiments, the CIA staged coup to oust Iranian Prime Minister Mohammad Mukadesh, and the failed Operation Northwood scheme by the CIA and the Pentagon to launch, and they were going to actually do this, launch a terror attack against Miami residents so they could blame it on Castro and justify attacking Castro in Cuba. Before the 2001 anthrax scare identified any individual or group behind the toxic letters, according to an FBI whistleblower, the Bush White House instructed the FBI to blame the attacks on Al-Qaeda. But Al-Qaeda had nothing to do with it. Later, it was revealed that the threats were carried out by one or more U.S. government-employed scientists. Who was behind those individuals or person? We don't know. In addition, the U.S. government frequently launches conspiratorial misinformation campaigns through the major corporate media and Silicon Valley complex in order to support its clandestine long-term agendas. Right now, that is playing out because of the outstanding investigative work of the prosecutor, Durham, and he has found the person that infiltrated the White House's computer system and other computer systems in order to collect any information that they could then put together to keep Trump from being victorious or after this to bring him down. And for 4 years, virtually 100% of the mainstream media, including Fox, was in support of this. And it was all lies. Four separate investigations lied. Now the truth is, the Clintons were behind all this. That's the fact. But the media won't touch it. The media won't touch Hunter Biden's laptop and what's on it. Because if they did, they would see the connection between Hunter Biden marketing his father's vice president influence and power and getting money for it. So why won't any of the media touch it? Because of how controlled they are. NSA Director General Keith Alexander claimed publicly, remember this, that intelligence service of the American public foiled 54 terrorist attacks by extremists. Not true. Independent research confirmed that the fact of only one attack, possibly two, could be directly associated with the war on terrorism. The FBI made the rest up. The media never questioned the accuracy of Alexander's claim, nor provided evidence to the contrary. Repeatedly, Obama lied to the American public about the largesse of the national security state and its infiltration into the lives of average citizens, including mass data collection, which was illegal at the time, of every one of your phone calls and emails and internet activity. Was he held accountable? Not a whisper against him in the media. The National Security Agency revelations of Edward Snowden documented proof that intelligence surveillance is far more extensive than officially reported, but others can be cited throughout the recent activities of the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, FISA courts, USDA, the FDA and CDC, and the Justice Department. The federal government is a vast sea of conspiracies at any given moment, and these are not conspiracy theories. These are only examples indicating factions within the federal government with treason to conduct conspiratorial acts. When the brilliant journalist I.F. Stone wrote, "Every government is run by liars and nothing they say should be believed," he may have just as well been speaking about the entire gamut of federal agencies. Examples of legalized terror are plenty and revo actions solely for the pursuit of profit at America's health. Besides withholding truthful claims, individuals, groups, and companies or government target in conspiracy theories share an atmosphere perceived as clandestine and secret. In the private sector, conspiracies are voluminous and are permitted to continue behind the backs of federal crime authorities. For decades, independent voices have suggested that Wall Street has undue influence over government and domestic economic policies. Yet there is barely a legislator or journalist in corporate media with the courage to independently investigate the darker side of the current events. The major corporate media, therefore, is also complicit, in my opinion, in our nationwide conspiracy of corruption and criminal behavior. Our media engages in campaigns of psychological terror against society by keeping the public in doubt and fear. Something is terribly wrong when there is such disparity between official rhetoric, corporate rhetoric, and the destruction of civil freedoms and justice and sovereignty and constitutional guarantees, now decimating human rights and the quality of life across the nation. America is awash in conspiracy. Every firm on Wall Street and in large private industrial complexes, oil and fossil fuels, nuclear energy, military and national security contractors, the pharmaceutical industry, agrochemical firms, insurance firms regularly and repeatedly engage in self-serving plots against the American public. Doubt me? I hired two young law graduates, and for 1 year, all they did every day in my office was to collect lawsuits filed against and won or settled against the pharmaceutical industry and then against the major corporations. So we had two different types of lawsuits, and they were into the hundreds of thousands. I could not find a single major corporation that had not been engaged, and yet not one of them suffered because of it. Not one. And these are the same ones engaged in public-private non-compete bids today. And yet you're told, believe them, believe them. Private corporations and their employees have settled many thousands of lawsuits, on occasion accused individuals, usually propped up as patsies and fall guys, have gone to jail. But in the vast majority of cases, companies negotiate settlements and walk away without remorse and are able to retain their ill-gotten gains. J.P. Morgan settled on $13 billion for mortgage fraud. But what did it mean if you work for J.P. Morgan? It meant nothing. Did you take any of the homeless people that you caused to be homeless in? No. Barack Obama, you said you were for the working class, especially minorities. How many minority individuals lost their home because you refused to provide pressure upon the banks and your power with executive order to put a moratorium on all home foreclosures, which you could have had done if you chose to, because you controlled Congress. You chose not to. Nice to have a $13 million home, Martha's Vineyard, where you can entertain 400 or 500 of your celebrity friends without masks, of course, but they all have masks. Nothing like contradictions. But have you ever allowed one homeless person to come into your home? Especially the ones that were thrown out because of the ill-gotten gains and corruptions of the industry you received money from? The banking industry? No. But no one talks about that. No. Well, Covia was slapped with a mere $800 million fine for money laundering, hundreds of billions of dollars, including dark money associated with the illegal drug trade. In every private industry, we discover numerous resolved class action suits with underlying conspiratorial intentions to deceive the public and federal regulators. Corruption is systemic throughout the corporate America world, and vulture capitalism is its driving force. It increases with every bill to further deregulate. A seductive characteristic of many reasonable conspiracy theories is that they cannot be ruled out entirely. For this reason, they become popular. Research conducted by psychologists Michael Wood and Karen Douglas at the University of Kent in the United Kingdom, and findings by political scientist Lance DeHaven in his book, Conspiracy Theory in America, indicate that conspiracy theorists are more sane and intellectually mature than our naive leaders in government and the major two political parties who more fanatically attach themselves to anti-conspiracy beliefs. For example, the Kent studies showed that 2 of 3 to impose inhumane policies to counter the COVID pandemic, a flurry of conspiratorial charges are being leveled against the vaccine makers, and it's about time. Anthony Fauci and the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease and the CDC and the Biden administration, they're all getting slammed. And since conspiracies arrive from observable inconsistencies and contradictions and obvious misstatements, the skeptical and critical thinking person realizes an official narrative is contrary to the growing numbers of persons who have been deceived. For example, thousands of medical professionals and physicians have now spoken out against the inaccuracy, the complete fraud of the original PCR testing to track the pandemic and determine case counts, grossly inaccurate, with a massive percentage of false positives. They never apologized. They just stopped that test. And only recently, after 2 years. The manner in which COVID-19 deaths were recorded, which included deaths caused by all other medical conditions, including influenza, pneumonia, and other infectious diseases. Unwarranted changes in the World Health Organization's definition of a pandemic and herd immunity. The violation of international laws by enforcing an experimental vaccine on the public. Suppression of data and reports of COVID vaccine injuries and deaths. The suppression of effective and inexpensive repurposed drugs like ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine that saved lives. And the evidence in over 100 studies, 96 of them peer-reviewed, have proven that. Many studies have shown the evidence that the masks were ineffective. Social distancing was a complete myth. When asked who came up with the science based upon 6 feet separation, nobody could say. It was just made up. Working in a laboratory that did a lot of viral work downstairs, I was upstairs and didn't involve that, everyone had to wear protective gear all the time. If one person is infected in a restaurant and is asymptomatic, everyone in that restaurant will be exposed to those viruses. Everyone. But you wear a mask when you go in, but then take it off when you sit down, and then put it back on when you're finished, as if somehow someone blows a whistle and all viruses stop midair, and then when you put it back on, then they go ahead and fill the room. Imagine that. And many years of scientific evidence against the effectiveness of masks and social distancing and lockdowns were completely excluded from the dialogue. On this program, I showed you two different tests done with two different groups of people. Teenagers putting on every type of mask, including N95s, and each one had a monitor underneath, one for carbon dioxide, the other for oxygen deprivation. They both rang within 15 seconds. And these are the masks your kids wore for hours upon hours every day. And you expect that not to have affected their brains, their neurons, their central nervous system. You'll see the results in the future. The widespread censorship of scientific voices within the orthodox medical community is only the tip of the iceberg. If our health officials were absolutely certain that their policies were science-based and could uphold scrutiny and open dialogue and debate, there'd be no reason whatsoever to ridicule, demonize, and silence your critics. That's not debate. That's not freedom of speech. Yelling at someone, screaming at them, condemning them, wanting them dead, as a stupid person on CNN suggested. How does that prove your point? That just proves that you're not looking for the real science. Rather, they would invite debate with open arms, similar to the worst kinds of religious fundamentalism that represses and engages in violence against non-believers, bureaucratic-driven medicine espoused by the World Health Organization and Anthony Fauci and Bill Gates are determined to remove and excommunicate physicians and medical researchers who criticize their dogma. In every worst possible way, the medical establishment is emulating religious institutions that have been intolerant of dissenters. Who invited Luc Montagnier, who won the Nobel Prize for discovering HIV, on the program? I did. He was on my program. I don't know of another person he did. And yet the moment he mentions that you could get rid of HIV with a healthy diet and lots of antioxidants and clean water, and he said that, and we played that, immediately he is attacked by the larger scientific community, because how can you have an AIDS pandemic if it's something you could A, prevent, and B, you could overcome without all the medicine, AZT, or a vaccine that never happened? And yet, where were the people to defend him? And then he started to do even more work, and for the last 30 years, he's been working on homeopathy and has saw remarkable improvements in people's health with including people with AIDS, with homeopathy. Have you seen an article in any of the American media about that? Nothing. Does he have the credentials? He's only the most awarded scientist in French history, including beating Pasteur. But evidently, even being the senior research fellow and professor at the Institute Pasteur, that wasn't good enough. Someone said he's a quack, then he must be a quack. That's what it is. But no respect should be given for any science that refuses to question itself. The medical narcissism embodied by Fauci and Gates is the face of a pseudoscience that is dogmatic and fundamentalistic and tyrannical. The official propaganda about COVID-19, SARS-2, the vaccine, and the banning of safe, cheap, and effective treatments is no friend to real science any more than religious militants are to authentic, ethical-based religion. The federal medical complex's handling of the crisis has been an utter failure for everyone except them. It's been an enormous success beyond any imagination. More profit has been made based upon this pandemic than any other time in world history. The federal medical complex's handling should be shamed. And now we're witnessing the larger cost of this incompetence appearing in unexpected harm, such as enormous spikes in mental health disorders and suicides and violence and how it's impacting the organs of the body. But hold on, it just stays in the deltoid, absolutely positively, no question about it. No, autopsies, when they were finally done, showed that the spike protein entered every organ of the body, and especially the brain. Whoa. And what would that do to the brain? There's new science on what it's doing to the brain. Fortunately, truth eventually, in time, exposes fraud and treachery. Pandemic policies and the vaccines are being exposed as a scam. Wall Street, which has only one motivation, protect its investments, is catching on. Just this week, Moderna's stock had fallen 70% from its high, and Pfizer's is down 19%. The public is rising up. Why? Why should Wall Street be interested in this? Because behind all this profit are legions of dead bodies. More than the Vietnam War around the world, 10 times over. 10 times more deaths around the world than the Vietnam casualties. But no one's held accountable. No one thinks that's a problem. Millions of injuries, many of them permanent. So now those people could not sue anyone. They couldn't get any help. But that's only because everyone from the very get-go, including Bill Gates, was identified. But in all those identification policies and contracts, if you've hidden information that shows that your product or service was fraudulent, you no longer are protected. And watch. Watch now as the class action suits by the thousands pursuit begin. Remember, for 100 years, nothing happened to Monsanto. Within a period of 3 years, it was decimated with tens of thousands of lawsuits, all of which it had to settle. And that's now multiply that times 1,000 when it comes to what's going to happen to Fauci and all these agencies. But remember, don't leave out the news media, because they were complicit. Fortunately, we are at a point where the lawyers are coming forward and doing their homework, doing their due diligence. Just keep in mind, though, there are two legal systems in this land, one for the elite, who are rewarded for their crimes, and another for the rest of us. For the past several decades, cadres of aggressive, self-serving individuals in the banking and finance industries and government multinational corporations and major media have dominated the national and international dialogue. Through a pervasion of effort and a perversion of the English language, this faction of legal outlaws has taken on the title of best and brightest. However, this in no way reflects their moral character. Rather, it refers solely to a pedigree education and either having been born into an extended influential family or having clawed one's way to the sitadel's power. Their oath is, don't bite the hand that feeds you. Canada's Trudeau is an archetypical example of this adolescent breed of intellectually diminished, but privileged tyrants. What all members of the best and brightest class share in common is a resume for being wrong repeatedly on all the important issues that have had the greatest adverse impact upon massive numbers of human beings and the environment. They were historically wrong about prolonging the war in Vietnam and the overinflated threat of the Soviet menace at that time. They were wrong about Afghanistan. They were wrong about Iraq. They were wrong about Syria and Libya and Honduras and Venezuela. Their pundits at Fox, CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, Washington Post, The Wall Street Journal, and other mega corporate media were negligently clueless about past economic buzzwords, the dot-com bust, equity partnerships, the subprime collapse, and the Great Recession of 2007 and 8. They will continue to miss new festering boils, such as the country's $30 trillion national debt, meaning our currency is virtually worthless. The dollar will be usurped in the next, I believe, 2 years by China. Then watch what you can no longer afford to buy. And watch your equity just dribble down in value. That's in the near future. The Federal Reserve, still entranced over the immoral ideology of Ayn Rand's objectivism and the consistent failed promises of Milton Friedman's neoliberal doctrine, were unable to predict the 2008 financial collapse and the crisis in bank solvency. None foresaw the immense consequences in the genius of their blindness, which led to the evisceration of millions of Americans' livelihoods and hopes for a better future. Perhaps a better future is too strong a sentiment, rather hopes for simple survival, or as some have suspected, the collapse was predicated all along and orchestrated for the benefit of the oligarchical class. Obama and the Bright Boys have systematically achieved historical high points in reaching the nation's lowest moments, 50 million Americans and 17 million children in poverty, 48 million on food stamps, 37% of all working poor are on food stamps. The 2008 economic collapse cost over $20 trillion. Did the rich and famous have to pay for it? No. Millions of people lost their homes, their jobs, children fell deeper into hunger. According to some figures, 53 million people entered the poverty ranks during the incompetent handling of the COVID pandemic during Trump and now Biden's first year. Those below the poverty threshold has increased by 4 million. Since higher moral and spiritual values have no role in neoliberal capitalism, nor will it in the forthcoming Great Reset, history needs to be rewritten to redefine the best and brightest. The irony that the best and brightest are the outlaws, Chris Hedges, Cornel West, Peter McCullough, Robert Kennedy Jr., and thousands of others who are marginalized, absent from all major media, and barred from government corporate citadels, and especially the liberal media. How about that? The very people you would see night after night, any one of maybe 50 people, you don't see a single one today. What does that tell you? Many commentators, historians, and political analysts have predicted a rising revolt, demonstrations and protests aimed at the federal government and the large transnational corporations that enact solely upon their own ambitions. The World Economic Forum's founder, Klaus Schwab, has been very clear that the Great Reset's implementation will foment revolt. His words, Schwab's stakeholder elites, and you're not a stakeholder, they are. Well, let me just say goodbye to our WBA audience. You're breaking away for the news. We're continuing to top of the hour. You can continue listening if you choose at prn.live. That's prn.live, live. Schwab's stakeholder elite's coat of arms deservedly should be an emblazoned buzzard. Scavengers without allegiance to human societies and who solely feed their self-interest on the carcasses of others. The World Economic Forum can count Trudeau, Boris Johnson, Germany's Merkel, BlackRock's Larry Fink, Bill Gates, Wikipedia's Jimmy Wales, and Al Gore among the thousands of their birds of prey. Their penitent for Machiavellian duplicity, myopic vision, and wrecking from the crisis, the stench of their rotten hubris, has consistently failed to predict a litany of economic, political, and social crises over the decades. They continue to deny, or at best misunderstand, the negative consequences of their unmitigated greed and quest for power, in my opinion. And in short, they don't care. That is also my opinion. Are we to believe that Wall Street didn't see the eventual collapse of Moderna and Pfizer stock after the FDA failed in its efforts to stall disclosure of COVID vaccine data for 55 years? Did they honestly fail to foresee the crisis in the equity partnerships, credit card, and commercial real estate bubbles? Are we to assume the presidents and chairmen and women of the largest banks, Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Citigroup, JP Morgan, didn't realize their casino investments would expel 3.4 million people from their homes, thereby allowing banks to become among the nation's largest landlords? It is unrealistic to frame the problem of control and socioeconomic manipulation as a war between the 1 and 99%. The 1% cannot achieve its goal without the support from armies of technocrats and workforces willing to sacrifice moral values to secure careers in corporations and political parties, regardless of the inhumane ruthlessness behind their undemocratic agendas. In his book, and if you haven't read it, you really should. It's an older book, and it's about American atrocities committed during the Vietnam War, Kill Anything That Moves by Nick Turse, T-U-R-S-E. It documents stories of soldiers' crimes against humanity simply by following orders higher up the chain of command. The analogy can be made for the employees of Koch Brothers Industries who repeatedly pollute the environment, the researchers in Monsanto's experimental farms, the hordes of mercenaries and military goons employed by private security companies with government contracts, and the thousands of computer programmers and security firms enabling the government to spy on Americans unconstitutionally and illegally. Although the banking lords of Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, Gary Cohen, and John Weinberg are the brains and eyes of the quote, vampire squid wrapped around the face of humanity, end quote. Not my term. Matt Taibbi's. The investment bank has 32,600 employees eager to be the foot soldiers to increase its nearly $1 trillion in assets. Go back to Hannah Arendt, talking about the banality of evil is indeed alive and well in the halls of corporate finance. The private industrial complex is too big to fail, too big to jail. Corporations require minions of technocrats and employees and a large network of contracted small businesses and advisors and consultants in order to exert control over the population. Therefore, realistically, we should be speaking about a 15% of those who hold all the power versus the average person. So it's not 1% have power and the rest don't. Weighing upon America's domestic social struggle only as an economic class war misses the significance of a parallel morality play for power. The 1% can best be understood in relation to the massive army of human resources that protect and secure its control. Everything you hear, everything you see, everything you read, every movie you watch has been under their control. TARP in the backdoor bank, bailouts, presidential police state agendas, exponential growth in the cybersecurity and intelligence industries, the ever-growing military-industrial complex, where the government, and meaning your elected representatives, give them actually more money than what they actually request. And this goes clear back to Clinton. Yeah. When we include approximately 45 million people, or 15% of the U.S. population, into the formula for who controls the major stakes of power, wealth, influence, and policymaking today, we can more easily understand how the psychology of groupthink creates a protective shield around the power brokers calling the shots. When the psychologist Irving Janis first coined the term groupthink, he referred to a collective weakening of an individual's mental efficiency, reality testing, and moral judgment through pressure to stick with the corporate plan. Among the characteristics common to groupthink, which enable the privileged elite to exert compliance to their mission without dissent, is a false belief in the inherent morality of their jobs. For example, during the past year, when governments tell us repeatedly that we have a moral duty to sacrifice for our neighbor collectively by getting vaccinated and herd immunity will eventually be reached, nobody is questioning whether there is any proof to support a mad rush to the vaccination lines. Despite all the evidence to the contrary, the COVID vaccines do not prevent SARS-2 infection, transmission, or immunity that is short-lived. Yet the persistent myth parroted by Biden and the media is the exact opposite, and the majority of Americans in unison still embrace it. Just understand, the groupthink also generates what people are exposed to, illusions of invulnerability, an insincere and narrow confidence that enables workers to take extreme risks, and a distorted group rationalization to deny facts to the contrary of their optimism. Other characteristics include stereotyping enemies, managerial pressure on nonconformists, and self-censorship of doubts within the organization. An illusion of unanimity is sustained whereby the image is created and perpetuated that the majority agree with the organization's purposes. And I'm going to stop here because I'm only two-thirds through. You can read the rest by going to GaryNall.com. It was interesting, though, I'll finish with this. Shortly before his assassination in 1881, President James Garfield stated, "Whoever controls the value of money in our country is absolute master of all industry and commerce. And when you realize that the entire system is very easily controlled one way or another by a few powerful men at the top, you will not have to be told how periods of inflation and depression originate." And today, the banking elite own the lives of millions of Americans by imprisoning them in debt. The majority of this debt, in the form of mortgages and outstanding home equity, student and auto loans, credit cards, etc., is money owed to the banking industry. It is by keeping citizens in debt slavery and securing debt allegiance and protection to extract money from citizens that enables bankers to control the economy. But it goes beyond that. Asking who those seated in the higher echelons at the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, or the World Economic Forum is the wrong question. We know who they are. Rather, we should be asking ourselves how and why these people think and act the way they do. What are the underpinning psychologies and attributes driving their motivations for increasing their wealth and power? How do we explain why Obama appointed die-hard loyalists from the Clinton cabal to many of his administration's cabinet positions? The very same people who have been repeatedly accused as the architects of the 2007 and 8 recession were the ones selected by Obama. The power and influence of individual citizens in the electric boils down fundamentally to a measly vote. This is limited power at the voting booth, and that is unfortunate. Because whoever can pay the most money, whoever has been selected by a secret group of individuals, is generally the one who is elected. So they're selected, then they're elected. And that is not the way it should be. So we're getting their version of the best and brightest. Who says that a cab driver, a school teacher, a baker is not also bright and talented and could do the very same things that these other people who've had no experience at managing a giant bureau could do? Many speculate on who and what might control the largest stake in governing the globalization of the planet. And that's what we're seeing, the globalization of the planet. One mindset, one agenda. And of course, as I mentioned at the beginning of this, who's your daddy now? That was referring to Klaus Schwab, who's been everybody's daddy, but we didn't know it. We didn't know for 40 years that he had a group of futurist presidents and people that he nurtured and he taught and he conditioned, Justin Trudeau and Vladimir Putin, Angela Merkel, and many others. And he even bragged recently that he had a high percentage of the people in power in Canada who came through that same system. So these are not people with their own individual opinions and ideas. No, these are people who they're looking at life and they're saying, well, there is no single Leviathan acting like a secret society that wraps its tentacles around the global economics and human community. But that's not true. They've been doing it. It's just that we haven't been paying attention. We thought that having all the wrong information was just okay. They make mistakes, but we trusted. We all took the test. And when the test was taken, it came back positive. We weren't told that The developer of that test, who won the Nobel Prize, Dr. Kary Mullis, he said, don't use this test, specifically don't use this test to do a diagnosis of an active infection. And that's exactly what they did. So tens of millions of people, hundreds of millions of people were told, you're positive. Okay, now what do you do then? Well, you isolate yourself and wait till you're so sick you have to go to the hospital. Well, what about all the drugs I could be taking now and medical treatment to save my life now? At the beginning of symptoms, nope, don't do any of it. It's all false. But it wasn't false. Everything that was being done around the world was accurate. Why do you think you had such a low incidence of infection and death in Africa? Because they've been using ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine for decades. In fact, it's called the Sunday-to-Sunday drug. They take it on a Sunday, and it protects their body throughout the week. But we weren't allowed to hear that. There were tens of thousands of scientists and medical doctors who said, we're doing this wrong. We didn't listen because we were told by the media, don't trust any of those people. But are these people quacks? No, they're highly respected scientists and medical doctors, frequently professors, and they published in peer-reviewed literature. They've had impeccable credentials in a career. And now they're all of them, tens of thousands, they're all quacks and charlatans. Who says? Someone who has no background in any of this, who's never treated a patient and has never created anything original in science, but who has an opinion and they're following what they're told to do. And so we believe someone from Wikipedia when they're destroying someone's reputation, or someone who's casting doubt on a good therapy like the New York Times and ivermectin. And they're not the specialists, but the specialists we were conditioned not to believe. That's an agenda. That's a globalized program. When you have 190 countries pretty much all using the same identical protocols of diagnosing and treating, and the only drug you're allowed to use is one that Anthony Fauci personally endorsed, but it has a very high mortality rate. In one study, 56%. So then that's one piece of the puzzle, because think of what would happen had we not locked down. Have we not gotten everyone a blood test? We only treated people who had symptoms. Would it then amounted to anything more than a seasonal flu season with deaths about the same level? We'll never know now, will we? Because we weren't allowed that. So, before you say, well, there is no conspiracies, and there's no cabals, that's all nonsense, understand that the CIA created the notion of conspiracy theories to hide its own conspiracies that were real. So rather than what we face is a shared collective unconsciousness that praises greed, wealth, and power above all else among the commanders of private industry and finance and government. And if you doubt me, just ask yourself this. Take some of the most respected publications in America. Let's take the Wall Street Journal, and let's also take the Bloomberg Report, and then take a look at the people they praised. They praise their success. They praise how wealthy they are. They praise how they've taken over and monopolized industries. But what were the consequences of those actions? Oh, that they don't talk about. But what about the good people, the honest people, the sincere people, which are most people? Do we ever see them praised? No. They're just supposed to follow. And so they do. They become a part of that collective unconscious. So we're praising people for the wrong reason. We're not looking at the consequences, intended or otherwise, of our actions. And then when we have a big problem, we start pointing fingers and triangulate the blame. The transnational elite hold no scruples that I'm aware of against funding their worst enemies in order to buy their cooperation or silence. For example, while the Koch brothers undoubtedly abhor PBS's social platform and feel more at home with the Fox network, they have no reservations about donating $23 million to public broadcasting to assure public criticism against them and what I consider, my opinion, their phony think tanks are anathema to their airwaves. In every institution, multiple tiers exist, each with its own power base, yet all are mandated to play by the institution's rules. Only after an individual threatens to upset order within is he or she redacted and expunged. But we never hear about that. An executive can be a card-carrying Democrat or Republican, a fundamentalist Christian, or an atheist. That is irrelevant to them. They don't care. Outside affiliations don't matter. And sharing personal views on politics or religion in what passes for diversity is corporate culture. There are generally six tiers for every large corporation and bank, each functioning in groupthink to sustain the wealth and the power of those at the top. The World Economic Forum, Davos, those are the people who are looking at everyone else and all their crises, how to treat cancer. Well, who owns the companies producing the chemotherapy or the radiation equipment, or who bought up all the oncologists working in different hospitals or clinics, and now they control the equity partners, own the hospital, they own the doctors. And now they dictate what is a therapy. But what if that therapy doesn't show a statistically significant increase in survival? What if using lifestyle and other non-toxic therapies would do better? They don't want that. If they can't profit from it, they want nothing to do with it. And therefore, they set a whole group of people of calling anything that cannot be profitized and kept within their own power, they call it quackery. And they've done this for as long as I've been helping people. So at the top of this pyramid, you have the elite who ultimately drive everything into the dark corners with their own elite members of the oligarchy. And below them are opinion leaders and high-level technocrats. Opinion leaders are the public face of a corporation or a think tank who provide a rationale for the policymakers. If you want war, bring forward former generals and former admirals, and they'll go right before Congress and say why this is an imminent threat to the United States security and we must go to war. Who's paying them? That question's never asked. Look behind that door that's been closed, and you start seeing that they're consultants, paid consultants, very nicely paid consultants, that from the armament industry. A corporation can't function without high-level technocrats. These are the architects who design and detail the policymakers' blueprints. They include the lawyers and managers who implement policies from above to assure the firm progresses towards its goals. Next are the functionaries. These bureaucrats are responsible for undertaking the research to support the blueprints, determine strengths and weaknesses in the plan. Below them are the worker bees, the administrative support who execute orders. Finally, above them all is a board, the alpha policymakers. Their only concern is that the company adds value and benefit to their financial assets and their personal careers. These individuals operate in a specter of amorality. The mandate is to increase coffers and power, and may include breaking the law if necessary. Their job is bound only to profit. Consequently, the mega corporations have a history of serial offenses, violating scores of regulatory laws and engaging in illegal business activities. Such corporations such as Pfizer and Merck have been fined billions of dollars, but this apparent loss is already built into the budgeting to assure revenues outweigh the cost of criminal behavior. Corporate groupthink, and it's one gigantic groupthink, the groupthink of Anthony Fauci and the CDC and the World Health Organization and the FDA and members of Congress and the corporations that they get funds sent from the government to them, and they create products that the government then can share in the profits, they're all thinking the same. It's a groupthink, yes. And between all tiers, and it keeps dissent out of the corporate DNA programming. Those who whistleblow or express opposition are led to the door. It is the self-perpetuating environment of blind loyalty, the dumbing down of critical thought, and the need to remain amoral towards the company's businesses that generates social epigenetic programming of employees. And while workers may not be expected to respect a corporation's chairman or CEO, it is the position of the chairman and CEO that is to be respected and held in high esteem. Similarly, people may have no respect whatsoever for who sits in the White House, but they continue to respect the presidency as an institution. Chairman, CEO, president, prime minister, these are nothing but brands in today's economic and political culture. And as many brands as you can get, the more popular you become, the more powerful you become. Americans have become experts at buying a brand regardless of the product's quality and actual value. The political and private institutions are masterful at branding and devising slogans to sustain loyalty and win new converts. That is what corporations and banks and political parties do. Politicians are especially skilled in the psychological art of slogans. God is on our side. Freedom and democracy. A freedom-loving people. We're peaceful people. No, we're not. The U.S. is the best country in the world. Yeah, is it? Bill Clinton was perhaps the most branded president, and the Clinton brand continues to serve Hillary and Chelsea's political and social significance, despite his tarnished reputation. Today, economic and political control over nations and resources is an ever-expanding partnership, a feedback loop among hierarchical cabals of wealth and influence that feed off who are outcasts from this group. They are lions and hyenas, each a predator of the other, but nevertheless gorging together on dying citizens who only demand democratic freedom and the opportunity to live independent from the scavengers of government and corporate regimes. But that doesn't seem possible today, because everywhere you look, there are new rules, new laws, what they can do, what they can't do. And that's because we have not been paying attention. Professors are allowed to get away with teaching critical race theory, a massive racist concept that can only bring divisiveness, depression, and conflict. And yet these people are part of that establishment. They're protected. No matter what you say, no matter how derogatory, no matter how accusatory, no matter how vile and pejorative towards someone else, an entire race, you're protected. We've seen that in the last 2 years. There are varying figures predicting the percent of psychopathology among high-level financial and corporate executives. Interestingly, in a general population, approximately 1% can be clinically diagnosed with sociopathic and psychopathic disorders. However, for the wealthy and the power elite, estimates are higher. The Canadian psychiatrist Dr. Robert Hare estimates that 4% of corporate executives are sociopathic. Dr. Sherry McConvey, a former high-powered investment banker, believes it is as high as 10%, and figures from psychological surveys in the United Kingdom have it even higher. Psychologist Dr. Clive Bode has argued that psychopathological behavior of financial executives was a major cause of the 2008 economic collapse. He also notes that individuals with the strongest psychopathic tendencies are those who tend to be promoted the fastest. The more ruthless you are, the more Darwinian you are, the more manifest destiny you are, then open the door. In a survey of 500 senior executives in the United States and United Kingdom, 26% observed firsthand wrongdoing in the workplace, and 24% believed it was necessary for professionals in the financial sector to engage in unethical and even illegal conduct in order to be successful. 16% said they would commit insider trading if it were certain they could get away with it. And 30% said that the pressures of compensation plans were an incentive to break the law. Wow. The vice president of the National Association of Chiefs of Police, Jim Corey, has collected data on personality traits common to specific professions. He focused on the characteristics of superficial charm, an exaggerated sense of self-worth, glibness in lying, lack of remorse, and a thrill in manipulating others. Corey observed that these to be in common traits to sociopathic killers. However, he also detected they were frequently shared by most, if not the majority of politicians. Investigations into many financial firms and corporations such as Enron, AIG, MF Global, HSBC Bank, Pfizer, Merck, GlaxoSmithKline, and many others have found widespread systemic chicanery. In an article appearing in the UK's Independent, a senior UK investment banker stated, quote, "At one major investment bank for which I work, we used psychometric testing to recruit social psychopaths because their characteristics exactly suited them to senior corporate finance roles," end quote. We can also be reminded of the former Goldman Sachs employee Greg Smith noting the disturbing psychological characteristics he exhibited by his bank colleagues. Research at Vanderbilt University has shown that psychopaths can have a dopamine abnormality that generates a drive for a reward at any cost and ignores risks, such as the drive for denizens of global banking surrounding presidents, the Tim Geithners, the Larry Summers, Floyd Blankfields, the Larry Finks, the Jamie Dimons of the world. I don't know any of these people personally, and I don't know to what degree they would be amoral, when it comes to making profits for themselves and the people they work for. The problems humanity faces with the transnational elite pulling the strings of power and siphoning the nation's wealth of populations and nations who support equally psychopathological political candidates to further advance their diseased agendas is dire. There is no horizon to the wealth and power they strive to reach. It is their appetite for greed is unlimited. In conclusion, in early 2013, the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich, Switzerland, conducted the most thorough analysis of the financial ties between over 43,000 transnational banks and corporations. This was the first empirical study to identify a network where global power and wealth is most heavily concentrated. Their startling results observed that a small fraction of 147 super companies, largely investment houses in the top tier, controlled over 40% of the entire transnational network, and below them an additional 36 million companies. Predictably, almost all of the 147 super companies were financial institutions, among the top being Vanguard, BlackRock, State Street, Capital Group, Deutsche Bank, JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Credit Suisse, and the Bank of New York. With financial instruments of speculative trading insufficient to satisfy their greed, such companies have every incentive to move into new territory, particularly resources and services that are essential to life, like fuel and food and water and minerals. The prediction can be suggested that with current trends, the largest global banks will become the world's most powerful nations, acting with complete autonomy outside of international laws applied to sovereign states. As corporate groupthink increases and infiltrates the larger civilian community, so will the transnationalist mind as the breeding ground of psychopathology. Despite the many crises facing the world today, we are given the promise that you will own nothing and be happy. Klaus Schwab and many captains of government and private industry who embraced the World Economic Forum's Great Reset are determined to usher in a new normal narrative globally. Unless people better understand the interrelationships between all power bases in America, and they are all interconnected, because I don't care if you go to commerce and banking, or to agriculture and seed production and food growing, or whether it's water or nuclear power, whether it is armament industry or drug making, wherever you go, there's an interconnection to all these people. And at the top of that sits a group of somewhere in the neighborhood of around 10,000 people, but the person who's in front of all those 10,000 people is Klaus Schwab. Everyone else is doing his bidding, and he's not hiding anything. So that's what we have to know, all right? So they're going to usher in their new normal narrative globally, unless people better understand this and start to push back and say, no, get off their grid. Stop honoring them. Stop believing them. Stop reading their papers, watching their television. Stop buying their products. And that way, we at least have a chance not to sell ourselves unknowingly for the new rulers. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening, and have a nice day.